Okay, being 6:30, we will begin with our opening statement. Council acknowledges that we meet on the traditional country of the Paramaykangana people. We pay our respects to ancestors and elders past and present as the custodians of this ancient and beautiful land. Together, we will care for this place for the generations to come, and in this context, the decisions we make should be guided by the principle that nothing we do should decrease our children's ability to live on this land. We do have one apology this evening, which is Councillor Gill. We have two existing leave of absences, but we have a couple of requests for leave of absence, which are up on the screen. So the first one for Councillor Harkin from the 28th of April to the 1st of May, and so on until up to the noon. Councillor Austin, you have to move those on the screen. Our seconder, Councillor Pascali, all those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. We also have a second request for a leave of absence from Councillor Boyd, which is just for today, this evening. Councillor Selwood, you're happy to move us on the screen. And Councillor Grant, second. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. So the next item on the agenda is our minutes of the previous meeting. Would someone like to move something related to that? Councillor Herman, as printed. Someone second. Councillor Grant. No debate or questions. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Does anyone have a declaration of conflict of interest this evening? Councillor Herald.
Yes, there is general conflict of interest in item 10.1, question notice, Portland Trees, on the title of the business CFS.
And you can now, instead of later, just indicate you intend on staying in the room or not.
I intend to stay in the meeting because I don't believe my personal views and council views are in conflict.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Any other conflicts of interest tonight? Move on to opening remarks. Probably just one point. It's really really great to see the state government announce earlier today the drought issue, the $55 million, which will have implications for us as a council. There were some specific items within that which we in our community will benefit from. Don't have anything else specific to report on tonight.
Can I ask a question?
Directly in relation to that.
Yeah. Was there any mention made of providing water to stock?
No. But there wasn't an issue around establishing standpipes in Adelaide Hills and Kura, and that could potentially deal with that matter. I guess there's a lack of detail at the moment.
Yeah.
We have no questions adjourned or questions lying on the table. We had no petitions and no deputations. We had a public forum, but we have no one present here in person. We may have some people listening in online, but they can't speak in the public forum. So we'll move on. No presentations. We do have a question on those, which was with regard to fallen trees and Councillor Cheetah. Unless you have any specific further questions, we'll move forward in the agenda. Now, we have no motions on notice, which brings us to the administration reports, the first one being towards zero emissions, the carbon management plan for Adelaide Hills. CEO, do you have any additional new information you'd like to provide to the chamber? Would someone like to move something in relation to that item? Councillor Grant, would you like to move as printed?
Yeah, I'd like to move as printed.
You can speak to the item.
Yeah, I will speak to it. I think this is an important part of the process that we adopted a number of years ago to reduce our carbon emissions, and this is the latest iteration. My only comment is I think it's important to note that some of the measures adopted in the original plan haven't been referred to, and I think it's good to refer back to the original measures that this chamber adopted, and if they become no longer relevant or unviable, I think it's worthy to comment on that because that was a plan the chamber adopted, and I think if we've changed our direction, that's perfectly legitimate, but it's good to understand why. And some, you know, some matters may not have been financially viable, such as battery installations, but that was part of the original plan for D Squared, behavioral change programs, things like that. And the only other comment I'd make is I think the more robust a plan like this is in identifying not just a target, but the means to achieve the target. And I know there's only so much detail can be addressed, but that makes it so much more robust. It can say, all right, reducing emissions with road base is achieved by X, Y, and Z, because I don't know the answer to that. Because otherwise, a target is a wish, not a plan. But these aren't criticisms. I think these are things that will help us achieve what we're trying to do here. So I endorse the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Seward. We're happy to second. Speak to the item?
Yeah, very briefly. I echo the comments made by Councillor Brown. Very early in this term, I attended a session that was held by the Local Community Association where they had invited a member of council staff to talk to them about our sustainability. And the big thing that came out of that was the community really wanted to see community emissions taken into account, and I'm really glad that this report does that. I also think this process was excellent in terms of pulling together a panel of people who were really interested in this in the community and talking to them about what they wanted. And it's clear from some of those priorities from the community were public and active transport, making sure that we're reviewing public space, buying solar and battery. And I think those things do come through in the report. You know, the transport is one of our biggest carbon emissions. So it's really great that people are thinking about that. And they also understand our role in terms of advocacy and making sure we're working with state government to do those things. So I think this is an excellent plan, and I'm really glad that we can do this.
Thank you. Councillor Mudge, would you like to speak to the item?
I've actually got some questions. Chair, forward through earlier, I got an answer to one of them, but there's still two outstanding. One of them was with respect to the initiative to implement annual energy efficiency program on the council facilities, which we've been doing and we'll continue to do. I guess my question is, why would you invest further in this if we would be procuring 100% renewable electricity? In other words, you know, if we save electricity, we're still, and invest money in saving electricity, we're still, we're not going to actually reduce any our emissions anymore. I remember this sort of statement, like the discussion we had at some stage.
Through you, Acting Mayor, but you have to take that one on notice. But what I can say is we are looking at making our fleet a lot more sustainable around augmenting it with, say, battery packs off of our buildings, therefore maybe capturing more energy and storing that energy and using it off-peak.
Yeah.
But I will most definitely get some more information on that question. Thank you.
Might be a consideration dependent on the extra cost for that 100% renewable, whether it's better off to spend it in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. And the other question I had was in relation to the initiative to undertake energy and water audits for sports and recreation facilities. Will this, and I'm sorry, I managed to get my way through the whole plan. Will this be only for council-owned facilities, or will it be open to sports and recreation facilities in the whole community?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you, Acting Mayor, and thank you for the question. Because we're looking at offsetting emissions from our community, I dare say that we look at a staged approach. We look at our facilities first and look at those that community own and see if they can join us.
Thanks. And if I'm on, just
make
some brief comments.
Sure.
So, when we first endorsed our first carbon management plan, which was about 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was a pretty groundbreaking thing for a council to do. I don't think many councils had those sorts of plans, and we were one of the first councils to declare a climate emergency. But it has become clear, I think, from reading through that plan that technology has changed a lot, things have changed a lot. the makeup and the priorities of the council have changed a lot. The fact that we're sort of keen to actually move away from just focusing on our own corporate emissions and actually trying to assist our community to get to net zero as well has meant that I think this refresh of the carbon management plan was money well spent. And I think it's a really good document, and I love the way that when we make these plans, we actually have a list of them, and then we have projections of how much it's going to cost, and we actually put that into our long-term climate plan so we can take into account and we can actually track our achievements against the plan. So I commend it.
Thank you, Councillor Nudge. Councillor Hearn, would you like to speak to the motion?
Yes, I support the thrust of the motion. However, on page 24, where the numbers start stacking up, are a bit of a concern to me. And halfway down under finance and resource implications, key initiatives identified for possible inclusion in the 25-26 budget. That's next year's budget. Quickly added them up, implemented them all in 1 year, it's about 700,000. Now, I don't expect that to happen. I'm sure this is going to have to be a staged project and CMC, but not even submit. The other point I make in supporting this is that the rules, Gareth, not Director of Corporate Services, tell me who made the rules, but there is a requirement coming forward that the council's annual reports from within the next couple of years has to report on the initiatives taken on sustainability. Not financial sustainability, environmental sustainability. So that will form a key part of our reports, which are public documents which can be scrutinised by everybody. I will support it at this stage.
Thanks, Councillor Hill. Anyone else like to speak to the item? Councillor Graham, would you like a right to reply? No, with the debate closed, all those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Move on to item 12.2, delegations with respect to the Local Government Act. Dr. Gill, do you have any new information you'd like to provide to the Chamber?
Through you, Chair, we've circulated earlier some changes on the table with more detail, but these listed changes in yellow, I'm not sure what was circulated in the table.
So this reflects the table. Yes, Councillor Hammond.
I'm happy to move the recommendation as printed.
And I was screen.
On the screen. I was one that did go through the whole lot of delegations and through the audience.
Thank you, Councillor
Hammond. Yeah, it's a big job, and I commend the officers who have prepared it. The ones that have changed, the basis that I use, if it's a policy matter, the council should if it's a policy matter, then the council should retain some responsibility for that. But if it's implementing something, and CEO does that. And I've tried to go through that, and that's the basis for these slight changes. I did put up one that the administration didn't agree, and I accept the reasons for that. Misread the cuts in some other section of the delegations. So I'm quite happy to move it. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. So I'd like to second the motion. Councillor Graham, would you like to speak to the item?
No, I don't need to. I think Councillor Holmes covered it.
Did anyone like to contribute? Councillor Sisson?
Thank you. I'll be supporting the motion, but I have a question.
Sure.
The Local Government Act enables many functions to be delegated to the Chief Executive Officer. Section 101 of the Local Government Act provides that the Chief Executive Officer may delegate or sub-delegate those functions that have been delegated. My question is, in the event that the Chief Executive forms the view that he or she may have a conflict of interest, how would the Chief Executive handle that conflict, given that they've been delegated power by the council?
The CEO answer that in this specific role.
Thank you for the question. Through you, Acting Mayor, if I do find myself in a conflict scenario or situation, I will delegate to an officer.
Thank you.
Yeah, Councillor Selwood.
Just for a matter of process, do you mind if we see the highlighted sections just so that we can have a minute to look at them?
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure.
I had asked the administration a question. I'm just wondering which one that is covered, which one covers what I had asked back there. It was in relation to the Audit and Risk Committee terms of reference that's approved by Henson. Yes, through you, Chair. It isn't captured because you asked us to include a reference to the limitation to terms of reference. But the wording of the provisions in relation to a regional Audit and Risk Committee, which doesn't have, so we don't need to have a limitation. There are no terms of reference. Thank you.
Any other questions or debate? No. Is there any for Councillor Herman? Debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. We'll move on to item 12.3, which is another set of delegations, this time with respect to the Planning, Development and Infrastructure Act. Dr. Hill, do you have any new information you'd like to provide?
Through you, Chair, just to reiterate that those changes reflect the changes that I circulated earlier today.
Thank you. Someone else move something in relation to this item? Councillor Grant?
Yeah, as on the screen.
Yeah. And would you like to speak to the item?
No.
Someone second, Councillor Herman.
No, I did go through it, but I had a bit more difficulty interpreting some delegations. Second.
Thank you. Would anyone like to contribute to the debate? Oh, yeah, Councillor Stoll.
The delegations with respect to this particular item provide delegations to the CEO. In the event the CEO deemed that he had
himself, is this the same question?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it'll be the same.
Oh, okay. I'll accept that's okay. Good to know.
Would anyone like to debate the item? No need for a right. Okay, debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. We'll move on to item 12.4. Here we've got lots of items tonight. Any new or additional information you'd like to provide to the chamber in relation to this item?
Through you, Chair, just to highlight the addition that we've added. This is just that the changes won't take effect until Council endorses the Work Health and Safety Policy, which is scheduled to come into Council at the next Council meeting.
And that's due to being draft form. Okay, would someone like to move something in relation to this item? Councillor Munch.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I circulated some additional wording bit earlier today. And obviously there's also some more wording to go with that additional wording. So if I could somehow merge the two sets of wording together, that would be good. And that's what I would like to move.
If anyone has not seen Councillor Mudge's alternate wording, it was circulated by email, so you can take a moment to read it before it comes up on the screen if you need to. One to read on the screen, or we'll read it. I'll let you speak to the item, Councillor Munch.
Thank you. I believe that this is a long overdue addition to our meeting procedures. In recent years, we've seen an upsurge of disruptive and abusive behaviour at council meetings in South Australia. This included disruption of a meeting at Onkaroonga Council in 2023. Where the meeting had to be suspended after just 8 minutes due to disruptions from the gallery. Burnside Council, as we know, has unfortunately had lots of disruption, both at meetings from certain elected members as well. And of course, we've also experienced in recent meetings some disruptive behaviour at our last meeting in December last year, which I believe was definitely a WHS threat. There are further meetings, and councils that have been disrupted from time to time, sometimes even with some collusions from some of the elected members that are involved in the meeting as well. There's been increased instances of poor behaviour from elected members which have gone beyond mere behavioural issues to full-blown WHS risks to psychosocial health of other members, staff and other members of the general public. This is a consequence of the increasing polarisation of our political discourse and the reduction of civility. It's no longer enough to disagree with others and engage in robust but respectful debate. There has been an increasing tendency to dehumanise the other side and engage in threatening, abusive, insulting, intimidating or bullying language or behaviour towards those you disagree with, both inside and outside of the chamber. The rise of politicians such as Donald Trump have normalised abusive and derogatory behaviour towards your opponents, regardless of the harmful consequences. As WorkSafe SA has identified, our media procedures have not kept pace with these developments, and we're overdue for revision to outline our processes to respond to these real threats. Before I continue, I want to stress that my remarks should be in no way taken to imply that any person in this chamber tonight has engaged in behaviour of this sort, but I think we need to be writing this procedure to guard against further future possibilities. As the council goes about its business, there is an ever-increasing threat of psychosocial harm from behaviour during meetings. Thank you to Dr. Gill and staff who've worked for a long time on these changes and put them out for review. I'll make some comments on the review, and I also look forward to additional changes in stage two of the process. I just wanted to talk about my proposed amendments, changes to what was put up in the recommended motion. I was pretty happy with where we got to after the reviews that we've gone through on this. However, my concern with that section about, responsible person having the power to actually declare that a council member not attend a meeting. There was some additional wording in there which I was concerned about, which I thought diluted it. So there was some language that was put, qualifying language that had been put in, such as in rare and exceptional circumstances, with consideration of the potential impact on the individual perpetrator's psychological welfare, and approach used only as a last resort and in line with principles of fairness. I believe this weakens both the legislative requirements of Section 75G and also the WHS Act, where if you know anything about workplace health and safety, you'll know there's a hierarchy of controls, and the top of the hierarchy of controls is to eliminate hazard. And it's the most successful or effective control. And I don't want to see us putting stuff artificially into our procedures, which would be put unnecessary barriers in front of the responsible person from exercising the exhaustion should an appropriate risk assessment deem it necessary. I understand it's probably a last resort in the sense it won't necessarily happen possibly ever, but I think it's something we need to change, so I commend the motion.
I've been reading B, C, and D, and I'm trying to detect the difference. It seems that B, C, and D are the same.
It's in relation to the structure in the way where it refers to elected members in one section, officers in another, and facilities.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's three sections where it has that repetition. If you go to the relevant section on...
Well, I'm reading 323 in the policy.
Yeah, there's a number of references.
Yeah, so it's 323 is under conduct council members, and it's yeah, so there's different sections there.
It might be easier to say, but I think it's quite significant.
Yeah, Councillor Selwood.
The numbers appearing on here are different from the numbers appearing in Councillor Mulcher's email. I'm just wondering if maybe that's
the one. Yeah, because it's got
3.2.3 each time.
Each time. Yeah,
yeah,
I think
it might be an error there. Yeah, that's what I was saying. To me, it's just a repetition of the same thing.
Yeah,
I'm sure there needs to be a different one.
If I can just explain, I think
there's 3.2.2, then 3.3, 3.3.2, 3.3.2, A/D, and then 3.3.3.
There's different changes. So section 3.2.2D is just to delete in limited circumstances. And then section 3.2.3 is to
C is 3.32.
3.32, yeah, and that should be the latest. And that should be released in limited circumstances, so that's not correct.
Is there a reason we can't? It's council, I'm just working from
here, though. Yeah, it should be. Just as
I think C is incorrect.
Yeah, correct. And yours, it's just in limited circumstances.
Yeah, so it's at the end of the debate about asking a member not to attend a meeting in limited circumstances. I just wanted in limited circumstances to do this.
Senate 207. No, C needs to say section 3.32A/D delete in limited circumstances.
Yeah, there was a type of the number, and that's why I had A/D.
Yeah, who do you want to go to?
Should have been D, but it's A.
I'll just send that through. Just while they're fixing up the wording, does anyone have any other questions? I won't proceed the debate through the wording on the screen. Let's all just hold.
Question.
Yeah, not so much. If you can just check that your that is the wording going well, but given the differences, if you can just review that. Yes, Councillor.
I was going to ask when we accept, would you like to read out the finished document? Like what is 3.2.2? What is 3.2.3? What is 3.3.3? How it will actually appear in the policy.
So 3.2.2.
So if we go to page 356 on the agenda, it's got 3.22. Councillor Mudge's part A is suggesting to delete under D in limited circumstances. Then in part B, instead of having the writing that is currently there, it would be a direction to not attend the meeting may only be given if there are no other reasonable directions considered appropriate in the circumstances to ensure health and safety. And if we go to section 3.32, which is on the following page, 357, again, it's just deleting in limited circumstances under part D. And then under 3.33, directly under, it's the same, removing the wording that exists and replacing it with a direction to not attend a meeting. May only be given if there are no other reasonable directions considered appropriate in the circumstances to ensure health and safety. So instead, for example, where 3.33 is there in the purple on your agenda, instead of having that wording, it would have the wording suggested by Councillor Mudge. Yeah, so Councillor Munch has moved his motion. Does anyone wish to second the motion? Councillor Brown, would you like to speak to the item?
Yeah, thank you, Acting Mayor. Just briefly, and I thank staff for the report and Councillor Munch for this motion. Yeah, just a couple of comments. I think updating these procedures is clearly important just to address recent issues that have arisen in this chamber. And it's equally important that we all agree to abide by these rules, because these are the sets of rules that ensure we conduct our business in an efficient and respectful manner. It cannot be said too often that difference should never equate to division. Our role in this chamber, by its very nature, requires debate and disagreement in order to examine ideas, explore them, and come up with the best decision for the community. So differences are inevitable, in fact, required for a chamber to operate properly. The principle of loving thy nature should not be invalidated simply by disagreement, and our belief in democracy should not be subject to winning the day. Sometimes we don't, but we believe in the system that we've signed up to perform. So I think these rules are an excellent way to help us operate well and serve the community that will sign up to serve. So I endorse the motion.
Would anyone else like to contribute to the debate? Councillor Pascal.
Thank you, and through you, Acting Mayor. I was the one that asked for these clauses to be expanded, and I just want to share with the chamber my rationale. I think, first of all, in relation to some of the comments that came to us via the email from Councillor Munch, I don't think we can say without legal advice or good governance that we are potentially conflicting the requirements of the Work Health and Safety Act. I didn't see any legal advice around that. But the reason we're doing this work is because we are under directions from Safe Work SA, and we have to recognise that both our administration and chamber have been under investigation from this body. And I believe 75G was being enacted in its form, we would not be in this situation. I argued for the clarification and the expansion of the definition of these clauses because, as it reads now, the interpretation can be the ostracisation of the victim in the case of psychosocial injury. And the act of ostracisation is stigmatising and discriminatory behaviour, which leads us open to complaints to the Equal Opportunity Commission. Legislation is only good when tested in law, and if we can make our intentions clear, then we are less open to that litigation, which could come under the Equal Opportunity Act. We are one of the only councils in this state to be doing this work, and probably because of that, we are really testing new legislation around psychosocial impacts. And I actually think it's an opportunity for us to embrace being progressive as an organisation. And I would have preferred that the clause stay open as it was, because it made very clear in our intent not to ostracise or stigmatise people who are going through psychosocial safety issues. And I also feel it protects the rights of people to feel safe in this chamber, which is, to me, I'm advocating.
Thank you, Councillor Pascal. Would anyone else like to contribute? Councillor Osterstoff?
Thank you. Through you, just a question arising from Councillor Pascal's contribution. Councillor Pascal mentioned that Safe Work SA is investigating or has investigated this council chamber. The administration able to comment on that?
I'm not sure. I'll pass it over to the CEO for that one.
Yes, through you, Acting Mayor, thank you for the question. So Safe Work SA have issued notices to gather information and also issued us with the improvement notices as well. So it's been a collaborative effort. So that's the mechanisms of what has triggered what we're about today and what we're deliberating on today.
And just a follow-up question. Has SafeWork SA commenced or investigated this council for breaches of the health and safety legislation form?
No, through you acting there, the council isn't being investigated by SafeWork SA.
Point of order, it's actually confidential according to SafeWork SA around that information.
I'm not aware of the information.
Yes, Councillor Sewell. Yes, I have a question through the acting mayor to the administration. There are some principles sort of that were embedded in the past that the motion proposes to delete. Principles such as being a last resort, principles of procedural fairness, the impact on the individual psychological welfare, and things like that. And I'm just wondering if it's the view of the administration that the wording that's proposed up here would still take into account those principles without being listed specifically, because it does talk about being no other reasonable directions considered appropriate.
That's good.
Yes. I think in practice, they would be the principal guiding principles. I think your vendors would have to guide what's done and provided. In work health and safety context, it really depends on urgency in terms of procedural fairness. So what's reasonable procedurally might change in circumstances. I think the wording of the Act is clear that it is only, I can't remember the exact wording, but it's... there's no other reason correction. I think that some of the wording in our proposed is really an attempt to capture what that would, some of the considerations you might give to thinking about whether it was there was other reasonable corrections.
Okay, would anyone else like to contribute to the debate? Go back to Councillor Nudge for the reply.
Thank you. Yeah, look, I just wanted to address a few points that were made. And I guess what I don't understand is if we did keep in some comments about considering the psychosocial risk, the way I read that was the psychosocial risk to the person who is potentially going to be excluded from the chamber. My thinking is that if the administration have done a risk assessment, as is mentioned in previous paragraphs of the policy, and they've identified that the risk is serious enough, then that has to override override any other consideration. It's you know, the safety of people in this chamber and the public and the staff members is paramount. And I guess my concern is that hierarchy of controls, the fact that exclusion but elimination of the hazard is right at the top of it, and if we're saying that it's going to be a last resort, then we're actually turning that on its head. If the hazard is serious enough and the risk assessment points that that's actually going to be the best course of action, and that best course of action is to be taken, and my concern was that the wording was such that the responsible person, in this case, it would be the mayor or the deputy mayor or the presiding member of the committee meeting, would have potentially barriers in place for them from actually taking that action, even though it was the best course of action through that hierarchy of controls to actually eliminate the hazard. So I can only motion.
Okay, with the debate closed, all those in favour, please indicate. Those against, that is carried unanimously. Moving on to 12.5, the Rainbow Standards Panel of Contact Officer, Dr. Gill, do you have any information you'd like to provide, Chamber?
Just to note that I also circulated the meeting some proposed change.
Thank you. Councillor Sewell?
Yes, I'd like to move some alternative warning that I sent through a bit earlier.
if the elected body. Has anyone not read this? You sent two emails to me, so this is the
second one. So if I like to members, I just sent it to
okay, so this is slightly different. Yes, yeah, so if the elected members could just have a good read, it's the same intent, my understanding, but the wording is slightly different. So I'll just give you a moment to read through that. That's so where it talks about appendix one, could we specify this section? So I assume CEO or the CEO is mentioned in alternate areas of that policy. And we don't want to change throughout. I assume you're referring specifically to the contact list.
Yeah, but I think there's two places where it refers to it separately. Sorry, and
there's a little last place. Yes. Is that wording sufficient that it would only render those rooms? Yeah. I think the library of that is it would change CEO in the entirety of the policy.
Only where to replace CEO as the contact officer.
Okay.
So it's only where it occurs yes. as contact okay. officer.
All right. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes. So this is not at all a reflection on our current CEO or any of our current situations. The reason that I think an executive governance officer is the right person for being the behaviour standards contact officer is for a number of reasons. Firstly, most of the time that behaviour standards panel are going to be contacting the council is about notice, and we are the employer of the CEO. I do think it is the right thing that the CEO is kept informed of what's going on. With regards to contact made by the behavioural standards panel, but I do think that the executive governance officer is the right administrative role to be able to provide the information that the panel are asking for from us. It is a very administrative thing, and I'm not by any means saying that the CEO should be kept out of that information. I just think that this is the right avenue. When we look at other councils, metropolitan councils, there is only one which lists the CEO as the contact officer. So most of them, such as City of Adelaide, City of Burnside, City of Campbelltown, City of Holbass Bay, City of Mitcham, City of Norwood and Paynham, St Peters, City of Onaferinga, City of Playford, City of Port Adelaide Enfield, City of Prospect, City of Salisbury, City of Unley, they all are appointed by council. And there are a few that listed as governance, so that's the Town of Gawler, City of Teetra Gully, City of Onaferinga, City of Playford, City of Campbelltown, which I spoke about before. So it's a common practice that this is either appointed by council or it is the governance officer. It is only the City of Marion that does have the CEO listed. It is an administrative role, and I think that that's the right place for it to go. I think the rest of the policy changes make sense. So that was the only thing that I thought needed changing. And so I can move the motion.
So question, Dr. Gill, point three, where it talks about if the executive governance officer is unavailable, the contact will be another delegate appointed by the CEO. That's not explicitly stated in the policy. So should this be passed, would it be appropriate to include that as another change within the policy so it's explicitly said in the policy itself, not just the motion?
Yes.
Okay, so could we, well, I mean, it's up to the mover, I'll just read that out because I've just got a little section open here. Does that make
sense? There's a variation on how we need to conceptually do that.
You can say under section five, so just under point four, you just have the percent of dot points in section 5 included and you use that wording.
Yes. So under, so point
4. Under point 4,
so point four I go by I, yeah.
Yeah, that's so I just want to make sure that if it proceeds, it's actually reflecting the policy as well. Just before you...
In section
5. Yeah, so you say include in section 5 and then italicize that wording. So is that that's fine from government's perspective? Given that no one seconded it, you can move it.
Yeah, I'm happy to move that
as it's on screen.
Currently, yeah.
Okay, so you've moved, you've spoken. So much, Councillor Cheetah. Councillor Grant, you've got your hand up, you've got a question, or would you like to second the motion?
Yeah, I've had a question, sure. If I may, acting mayor, and then maybe with a good doctor on your left. The question being, as this is Dr. Gill's report, perhaps Dr. Gill could explain the rationale for the original recommendation, and that was the CEO as the behavioural standards panel contact officer.
Dr. Gill?
Through you, Chair. We've recently attended some delegation of training from Norman Waterhouse lawyers, and their advice is that councils have historically had a tendency to kind of sub-delegate below the CEO, but their advice is to shift the practice to delegate to the CEO, and then the CEO sub-delegates. And part of the reason for that is it's just administratively easier for us. So if we need to change, if positions change or titles change and roles change, it's just much easier to get the CEO to change the sub-delegations rather than have to come back to council with the agenda report to do that. So it's just a practical measure that makes it easier.
Thank you. Councillor Stoll, you have a question?
Yes, just to clarify, you're through you, Acting Mayor, and Dr. Gill, you've received legal advice saying that the CEO should be the person charged with being the contact officer or the delegate, and then the CEO decides who he or she delegates that function to. That's the advice.
No, that's not the advice. We've attended training by Norman Waterhouse on delegations.
In general. Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Councillor Hammond and then Councillor Cheetah.
On page 402, you put that up under 5 responsibilities.
I just hear one friend here.
Page 402, following responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened? Responsibility of the deputy mayor. Now, in the second dot point, in consultation with the CEO to facilitate access to resources. So the CEO still has the holds the first. He can allocate
resources. So they're two different things. So that first section referring to the deputy mayors in relation to managing complaints in general, typically be the deputy mayor, not always. Whereas the and yes, the CEO determines whether any matter or support be provided. The second part, that I guess the part we're changing the policy tonight in whatever way council endorses is specifically in relation to the contact officer for the behaviour standards panel. So that's not any complaint that goes through the policy would be something that is referred to the behaviour standards panel, and then the behaviour standards panel, if they had questions or information, they would go to that contact officer specifically to seek that information. That make sense?
Making a conflict for me.
So we've got like that, the overarching policy is all around how council will manage complaints. Within that, there is a small section around who is the contact officer for the behaviour standards panel. And that's what we're considering tonight with respect to the change. That if the behaviour standards panel had a matter and they wanted to seek information, who would they contact the council?
So that would be the...
Well, if this is endorsed, it goes to
the government.
Correct. Board.
So it could have been under the recommendation, which is
the CEO. Correct. Yes. So I'll just go to Councillor Cheetah next and Councillor Parker.
Hold on just a second, but if someone's got a question.
Carol.
I was going to say.
And so, Councillor Cheetah, would you like to speak to the motion?
Yes, just briefly. I don't go down a ditch over this, if I'm honest. I think this is a process that will play out from time to time. I think the government's officer is the likely person to receive the delegation the vast majority of the time. And I think it's fit for purpose. So I know there are alternatives. I don't see any particular point made so far to shoot this one down. So I'm in support of it. It achieves what we need to. It's administratively sound. I haven't heard any feedback that it's a risk. So I can't second this.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak to the item? And Councillor Hussack.
I'm hesitant to support this, given what Dr. Steele's comments were just before. I feel like we rely on training that is undertaken to make decisions like this, and we're not following the advice that we've been given during this training. So I'm not quite sure why we're not doing that and why we don't follow the process that we're encouraged to follow. So I'm not, I don't know if I can support this motion.
Councillor, I'll just stop you. Councillor from the
I agree with Councillor Huxley. We have received advice from our governance officer that the training that she has received has indicated that delegations should be made to the CEO in relation to a whole host of matters, and that is the CEO's role to delegate. And the CEO, in answer to a question that I raised, should the CEO, as with any elected member, be of a view that they have a conflict, that they manage that conflict, and on the CEO's own, admission, he said that he would delegate that function to another officer. Earlier this afternoon, I sought my own private legal advice on this matter, and the advice I received was consistent with Dr. Gill's advice that the appropriate officer as a behavioural standards panel contact officer is the CEO, and the CEO delegates as the CEO sees fit. So I really am struggling to see the purpose of this proposed motion, which differs from the officer's recommendation. Point three, just bear with me. Where is the... It's the point that says if the governance officer is unavailable.
Point three, so include in section 5, where the executive governance officer is unavailable, contact us will be another delegate appointed by the CEO.
Well, isn't that a contradiction in terms with what we're looking here? On one hand, in point one, we're saying we're going to appoint the governance officer as opposed to the CEO. And then if the governance officer is unavailable, the CEO, the responsibility for appointing the contact officer falls to the CEO. Now, that clearly is a contradiction in terms in respect to the motion. So, and earlier on in the night, we moved a host of delegations that we considered which delegated a host of powers to the CEO and or the CEO's delegate. This motion, the original recommendation from the officers, Dr. Gill, is no different to the report that we just considered a few moments ago on delegations, where we delegated a host of powers to the CEO and or the CEO's delegate. So I won't be supporting the motion. It's inconsistent with the legal advice that Dr. Gill has received. It's inconsistent with my own private legal advice. It's inconsistent with the council's position that it just took a few moments ago on a host of delegations that we resolved to appoint the CEO as council's delegate. So I won't be supporting the motion.
Yeah, Councillor Stone, Councillor, do you have a question or you want to debate?
I do have a question. Through you, and I'm not quite sure the best person to answer this question is. And it's in relation to Councillor Searle, the information that Councillor Searle gave when she moved her motion, which actually I found very convincing, which was that, you know, a number of other councils, had appointed the Executive Governance Officer or the equivalent as the Behavioural Standards Panel Contact Officer. But what it would be good to understand is how those executive governance officers were appointed. Were they appointed by a council or were they appointed by the CEO? If they were appointed by the CEO, that would make sense. But,
yeah,
so is there any way, the question is, how do we find that out?
Well, the only administrative staff member the council employ or endorse is the CEO. So any governance person in any other council would be recruited by the CEO.
Okay.
In relation to the policy itself, all of those policies would have been endorsed by the council.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
just like this, like any policy would go through council. Outward facing policy, I should say.
So just a point of clarification then, it's your view that all of those behaviour standards and contact officers in those other councils would have been appointed by the CEO as a delegate rather than
they would have been appointed as a employee. It would have been ultimately the elected body that have made the decision to have them as the contact officer because they've endorsed the policy. So whatever is within that policy is a resolution of that council. So it's the elected body's decision.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah.
So why would the advice given to this council differ to the advice given to all of those other councils that are going about this differently? What's different about us that we would get different advice?
Well, I guess it's, Dr. Gill's advice was in relation to delegations in general, but this is one very specific delegation in a policy. As you saw earlier in the evening, there are a whole host of delegations. I could not tell you about an individual council's reasoning for or what advice they sought or what workshop they had to come to their conclusion. It's just Councillor Searle's provided that information, the context of the impossibility at this point.
Yeah, great, thank you.
Councillor Pascal.
Thank you, and through you, Acting Mayor. I just want to clarify that this wasn't legal advice. This was something that was given at training. And I think if we start relying on... And I think if we start relying on individuals' legal advice they're getting outside of this chamber, it's a slippery slope and it's a dangerous precedent we're setting. I think just in relation to delegations, though, I think the point that Councillor Searle would make that we are the CEO's employer and this is in relation to our conduct and behaviour, I think it is good governance for us to give this role to the Executive Governance Officer. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was a consideration by the councillors as well, because that to me sounds very obvious. And that point double I, I'll call it, I actually think that's just us making it quite clear what we're going to do in that situation, and it doesn't have to necessarily come back to the chamber for us. For me personally, my personal opinion was I did prefer that this question came back to the chamber as it had done previously, and we collectively agreed what was the best course of action, but this actually makes it quite clear. So thank you, Councillor Selwood, for moving the motion.
Would anyone else like to speak to the motion? Councillor Grant?
Yeah, thank you, Acting Mayor. I'll speak to the motion. I have a feeling the result of this might be of great significance, but there's some important points of principle, I guess, that we're addressing here. So we might as well tee this them out. So the way I see it, the power that's gifted to council by the Local Government Act resides with this chamber. The chamber delegates that power, or there's some of it, as it sees fit to the CEO, as we've done earlier tonight. And powers are delegated to the CEO or taken back as the chamber sees fit. The CEO is appointed by the chamber. We've chosen the CEO and trust the CEO run the organisation as delegated by us. To divert from the system of delegating through the CEO, I think requires justification. I'm not saying this it can't be done. Of course it can. But I don't think administrative convenience is probably enough of a justification, which I'm not saying that's the only reason here. Yeah, it's true the CEO receiving a matter relating to the behaviour standards panel may simply be flicked through to the governance officer as a matter of routine. May happen every time, I don't know. But that's all right. The CEO delegates constantly in his role, in an everyday role. And I don't think there's any reason that couldn't be the case in this situation as well. I think, section 3, subsection 2, in a way, reverts back to the CEO anyway. It doesn't really support the whole pretext of the motion. And I don't think there's any suggestion that the CEO is going to have any difficulty identifying a conflict of interest in this or any other matter. This is routine, the CEO, as it is for us, addressing conflicts of interest and dealing with them. No matter how likely the conflict, the CEO will deal with it and address it in his normal work. We all routinely make such judgments. So for these reasons, I can't support that the motion as it stands. I think the argument that it's common practices under other councils, it tells us something, but it's not a convincing argument. Many terrible things have happened that were common practice at the time and continue to do so. What we have to judge it by is what is right. And I think in this case, what is right is simply to delegate to the CEO and allow the CEO to make the decision. My final point is I think we should listen to the experts, and I think the advice from Dr. Gill suggests that may well be the way to go. So I won't support this motion as it is.
Councillor Hammond, would like to speak? Well, I may or may not. I'll take the advice from you. I'd like to see the adjournment, if I could explain why. Would you accept that?
So you'd like to...
I'd like to adjourn the
debate. To try and adjourn, if you're adjourning the debate... Right,
until the first meeting in May.
Yeah.
To allow the CEO to provide advice on how neighbouring councils appoint their VSP contacts. As I've heard, well,
when you say how, what do you mean?
Yeah, well, who appoints?
Who
appoints? Is it the CEO?
No, it's a policy. It has to be council. Like, the elected body endorses the policy, so it's ultimately the council.
Right, so that's not what I'm trying to find out. I'm trying to find out, CEO to find out who appointed the contact officer. I'm not sure if I've got that right either.
Councillor
Gill rattled off half a dozen councillors. He said that the council appointed the contact officer, not the CEO. So I'd like to know. I'm trying to get a feel for if that's common practice.
Yeah. I've got a question that I could ask.
Help me through this.
Can I ask the question?
Can I ask the question?
that's going to help us proceed this time. Yeah.
Yes, it will, I think. Through you, has the CEO obtained any advice as to best practice in the industry in respect to this matter that's currently before the council, whether or not the CEO is the appropriate person to be appointed as a behavioural standards panel contact officer?
My panel, is that the CEO?
Through you, acting mayor, and look, thank you for the question. Best practice is that the contact person is the CEO. I can't speak about other councils, but and I haven't done a deep dive with regard to the reports that were given to councils to deliberate on. But the CEO in those cases might have made a recommendation, but it is the governance person on that occasion. But the advice and best practice is that in this situation, the contact officer should be the CEO.
Thank you.
Just to follow up as well, and to answer, we haven't specifically sought advice about the role of the contact officer in this policy.
So I need to go back to Councillor
Fuss. Same thing there. What I'm trying to do is not
now microphone, please.
No, no, switch it on.
Okay. So what's it, I guess, what is the purpose?
A space to ascertain some facts about how other councils, the reason why other councils appointed a person other than the CEO, and why, if what the CEO said, why they didn't follow best practice, if that's the case. So give us a... Give the council a month to give the CEO a month to investigate those things, because I'm going to leave both camps. You know, I understand.
Hold on, I'm just trying to think through. Yeah. So the, I guess you could move an adjournment in order for the CEO to obtain further information on how other councils have determined to appoint their or choose their other officer, and then. I guess to be up to the elected body to decide whether they feel that's warranted.
No way to speak.
I think you just clarified you seek to an agenda that's considered speak.
You can't.
So because it's a formal motion, you cannot
speak.
You can't say
what we
have. We should be adjourned for seeing to seek advice.
Point of order.
In a second, Councillor Herman is allowed, if he wants to try and move an adjournment, and then it's up to the body whether they choose to do that, and then I'll come to questions. Please, that takes precedence.
Okay.
So it's a question to adjourn to enable the CEO to obtain further information regarding how other councils determined their behavioural standards panel contact officer. So there's a done. Yeah, so you can't speak to that. That's just a formal motion. I think people understand enough what the reasoning is. So just give me 2 seconds. So Councillor Herman has sought to adjourn the item. Do I have someone who would like to
say? I did say May, but...
until the first meeting in May. Councillor Chidi wouldn't second that. You can, even though you've spoken. Okay, there is no debate regarding the adjournment of an item, so all those in favour, please indicate. Hold on. All those in favour, please indicate. Those against. That adjournment is carried. Oh, hold on, you can't.
I have a question. I've got a grammar issue.
Oh,
I've got a headache.
Okay.
I'm
going
to go to the toilet.
I ask for who is in favour, who is against. If that motion is carried or motion is adjourned, like that item is now adjourned until the first meeting.
But after a point of order, I think it's a conflict of interest for the CEO to be doing this investigation when it's the CEO wanting the
there we go.
Doing it.
Well, that is true. Yeah,
yeah, that's the usual way.
It's not our position. So,
yes, yeah.
Apologies, I should have come to you before that, but I think ultimately it will be.
That's really helpful.
Yeah, so it is how we normally word any resolution from council, but we'll have heard your views about that. Yeah.
Can I raise my grammar issue or not?
Your grammar issue?
Yeah, regarding how is. Sorry, it's been English, Egypt.
Oh, how is she?
Yeah, it should be further information regarding the manner in which or the way.
No, well, we've endorsed the motion. Mm-hmm. And I do apologise for not coming back to you before putting to the vote. I think the intent is understood.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, Brown,
that's the main thing, right? Yeah. Right. So, we'll move on to information items, of which there are none. We'll go to correspondent noting, which there is none. Does anyone have a question without notice? Any questions without notice? Is there, yes?
Yes. Thank you, and through you, Acting Mayor. My question is concerning Norton Summit, and there is an area where the statue for Anzac Day services are, and they've been on maintenance around that post the event this year, and I just wanted to get a clarification if that work is still going ahead and what it would look like. If it's quite a bit of extensive work on rosemary edges.
Sure, through
you, Acting Mayor. I'm not exactly sure of the location that you're talking about.
If you cross from the CFA,
yeah, if you could give us the address, yeah. And I'll provide the response.
Okay, any other questions without notice? Any motions without notice? No, we'll move on to reports. So 17.1, we've got council member reports. Councillor Penwin, Councillor Pascali, and pop in some items. And then generally we'll just take it as read. So, did anyone have a meeting for an external organisation, one of the authorities, or no? Can we move on to the CEO who will provide an update?
Very quickly, thank you, and through you, Acting Mayor. My focus over the last couple of weeks has been on organisational development, customer service, how we can improve customer service within divisions and directorates, and also asset management and budget, as you're aware and up to date with. So I'm happy to take any questions on that.
Yes, through you to see you. Could you advise us on progress according to the Director of Infrastructure, Environment and Infrastructure, where that's at?
Through you, Acting Mayor, thank you for the question. We just had a meeting this afternoon. We had over 50 applicants involved, and it's been a really tough time to actually shortlist, but we've got them down to 8, and I'm looking at setting up the next process with those preferred aid.
And is that for a temporary or is the substantial?
No, this is
substantial. Yeah. Any other questions of the CEO? No, we will move on to reports. There is none for the CAP or audit. There's the CEO PRP. We will have all that in confidence. And maybe our new change committee. So we are now at our confidential items, and which we have won. So thank you for anyone online who's joined us tonight. And we need to firstly move into confidence. Let's wait for the motion to come up on the